Hello.
Hello.
Astraea.
Jade.
We're back with Ink Fox and Paper Tiger. Have you been enjoying your Sunday funnies?
Oh boy. I've just been laughing and laughing and laughing at every pixel that I can count.
Today on Ink Fox and Paper Tiger, we read T.H.E. Fox by Joe. How do you say his name? Acadius?
I think it's Acadius.
Acadius? From 1986 to 1991, I think?
Yeah. I believe it was 2001 is the last T.H.E. Fox comic. It was called Thaddeus by that point, but it's the same comic.
Okay, because I was slightly confused on the dates for this one, because this comic has been hosted all over the place and in varying forms.
Yeah.
The version that we're looking at from the Internet Archive was hosted on CompuServe.
Which is ironic, because a lot of sources say, oh, this was hosted on CompuServe, and the original comic was hosted on the original version of CompuServe for, like, half a year before he moved on to another hosting thing. Well, hosting isn't the right word, but
we're gonna need to supply some context, but let's begin in the brief. Overall impressions of this. Mine are conflicted.
Yep.
I would say. This is our first gag a day strip we're reading. There's no narrative here per se. The thing of it is that this comic has a single panel gag strip. The kind that you would see in the newspapers of the time. And I can't believe I'm finally old enough to say this. It used to be that you would read comics in the newspaper. When I was growing up, you read your comics in the newspaper, in the funny pages, which do still exist, but have shrunk even further than the shrunken down, chopped versions that we grew up with as children. It used to be, in the very early days of newspapers, in like the 1900s, that the funny pages were entire pages. A comic strip took up an entire newspaper page in full color, usually. And as time has gone on, and competition has grown, and more newspapers have grown, and you want to fit more funnies onto the page, they get shrunk, and they get reduced to color on Sundays only, and they get smaller and smaller and more black and white, and the medium gets more and more restrictive. These are things that cartoonists like Bill Watterson complained about when they were syndicated.
Yes.
In various newspapers. It was hard to artistically express yourself in tiny little spaces like that, and with limited color choices. So today, it's actually gotten even worse. I don't know if you've opened a newspaper in like the last decade or so, but like the funny page is tiny and dark. Like stuff that's been running for 50 years and is still in black and white and still telling the same jokes. The funny pages are a dour experience today.
And the ones that are trying to like maintain, I've noticed, are like, oh, this is totally angling for like the internet, like the reboot of Nancy from a few years ago. It's like, this is not for the people reading the paper. This is for people reading it online.
Yeah, this is for people to share on Twitter, which is a valid way to survive, but it's strange.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you also have your classics like of the walking corpse strips of, hey, let's give Dick Tracy to a former furry artist and have increasingly large portions of the plot be devoted to furry storylines.
It works for Dick.
But yeah, this one is panel a day for a while, and then eventually when it got to the internet, it does have some more conventional daily type strips, even though they were only published weekly, but some of them are labeled as Sundays. It's very confusing how this is laid out. I've looked at interviews and shit to see when each of the individual comics was from, and none of it makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a gag a day strip. There is a fox.
And a rabbit.
And a rabbit. And the fox's name is T.H.E. Fox.
And the rabbit's name is Bun E. Rabbit.
Yes, Bun E. Rabbit.
I could swear there was some other fictional rabbit whose name was exactly that, but I couldn't remember where it was from.
There's a lot of that with this where I'm like, I'm pretty sure I saw that before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was from somewhere else that's older than this.
But the reason T.H.E. Fox is... The reason I draw that comparison between T.H.E. Fox and these super comics is not just that the format's the same, but that the author specifically had the goal of getting T.H.E. Fox published and syndicated in the Funny Pages for the longest time, which in the late 80s and early 90s would have been a pretty good paying job. You got like an exclusive contract with various newspapers. You became not necessarily a national name, but lots of people would see your art on a daily basis. It would have been a pretty good gig.
And merchandising.
Yeah, merchandising.
Jim Davis.
What's the guy's name? Jim Davis is Garfield.
Yeah.
Was exploding in popularity and merchandise in the 90s. This wouldn't have been... It wasn't a wild thing to ask for. The problem is twofold. One is that T.H.A. Fox being produced on a computer, which I should say, it's not nothing to produce a comic on a regular basis with a Commodore 64, a computer that had no standardized paint program. And you're basically making mosaics at that point on a Commodore.
I found out how he actually drew them, though. I found out that he drew them. He drew them on, like, the first consumer affordable, like, touchpad.
Really? I didn't know that. I thought he would have just had to type it.
No. The Commodore 64 had this thing called a Koala Pad for it. And you could plug that shit in, and you would rub a little piece of plastic against it, and when you wanted to make a mark, you would hold down a button. It looks like a nightmare to use this thing.
Yeah, because I was like, how did this get made? Because Commodore 64s didn't come with mice, if memory serves.
Oh, yeah, no. This predated
The common computer mouse.
Yes. Like, I think mice existed contemporary to it, but they were not very frequently used, especially in personal computers.
No, they came over from Europe in the bowels of ships. And the other reason I bring up newspaper comics and how the author was angling to get one published is that, I don't know about you, I didn't find T.H.E. Fox very funny.
I did not find it that funny.
I didn't laugh very much reading this one. I was amused, don't get me wrong. But yeah. These gags didn't really do it for me.
Like, this is from the mid to late 80s. It is, in fact, contemporary with some of the greats in the newspaper comics right at this exact minute.
Calvin and Hobbes would have still been running. Peanuts would have still been running toward the end of its life.
Gagaday single panel, Far Side's.
The Far Side was still in the newspapers, like... No. No, I don't think T.H.E. Fox had a chance in hell being syndicated against giants like that.
But
say it didn't try.
Yeah, and it did get published, at least.
It is published.
Yes, he did editorial cartoons for the San Bernardino Sun. They are exactly the same as all of the other comics that he ever drew.
Reading through the archive, I had very few things stuck out to me. You know, being a Gagaday comic, it's about the mishaps of Thaddeus Fox and Bunny Rabbit, two animals who live together in an apartment, just domestic everyday experiences. This is a very, very common setup for lots of furry comics, and I guess just comics in general.
The Odd Couple.
They are just roommates.
They are literally roommates, yeah.
There's not really any queer subtext that I could detect.
The archives are missing, like, every comic where they have girlfriends, but I managed to dig up the ones where they do. Like, they're not, like, super egregious, but it's like, haha, the punchline is that guys wouldn't be into this thing. Like, oh, a Hooters restaurant, a restaurant with big Hooters, and it's two owls. And they're big hunky owls, and that's where their girlfriends wanted to go to this place. Big muscular owl men.
There's some rolling trends in this comic. I can tell that this author is a macro fan.
Yeah.
There's lots of comics where the joke is just, oh, but there's a giant animal coming, look out. And like, that's the extent of the joke.
Digging into his work, there is in fact a point where he starts calling himself a macro enthusiast, like years and years later.
I did notice that toward
the
end, yeah. on his website, yes. This comic's comedy is a... how do I say this? Like, it's got like that kind of dad joke quality.
We've sort of buried the lead here that this is allegedly the second webcomic ever. And the first webcomic, the evidence of it existing is kind of nebulous, even when I've tried to dig it up. Because nothing was saved of it, although there's reasons it might not have been saved, because like the CompuServe archive was lost. This was not on CompuServe. But yeah, this is the oldest one, and it was popular because you could share it.
Sorry to leap in and maybe make a harsh judgment here, but I feel like the only reason THE Fox might have been popular is that you could view it on the computer.
Yeah.
And nowhere else, which would have been the novelty at the time.
There was something that I found amusing, although it was kind of few and far between, was that I actually did kind of like when it would make a pop culture joke. Not because it was a funny joke, but because I had this cognitive dissonance with it, where it's like, oh, here's a joke about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and my brain, which is conditioned, it's conditioned to say, oh god, a furry in the 90s is bringing up Roger Rabbit 10 years after the fact. God, like, I mean, I know, I love that movie too, but like, I'm not sure why. Oh no, that's when this was from like the week it came out.
There's a fun holiday illustration for New Year's where like it mentions the Soviet Union.
Yes.
and it would have been made like in December of 89, like right before the wall came down.
Yeah.
I was like, there's a throwaway gag about story numbers. Even I'm too young for story numbers, but story numbers were an old like 1980s era telephone service/scam where kids would call a phone number and a narrator would read a story to them. It's a trend that died for reasons you can probably guess, because it was way too expensive.
Yes.
And they would always end up wasting their parents' phone bill. A lot of the jokes are like also just like, yeah, it's fairy tale jokes. The fox ate the chicken. The scorpion stung the frog. The old refuge of the hack comedy writer is fairy tale jokes.
There was a long interview with him about that, where he was very specific that he was, and there's this pattern of evasive, is he a furry, is he not a furry? He's definitely a furry, but in a lot of the interviews, he seems to sort of be trying to downplay that before a certain point, because he's like, oh, why is it a fox? Oh, because I think foxes are misunderstood. They're always the bad guys in stories.
As time develops, it becomes clear that the fox is his persona. Because, like, the fox is always the one throwing out the harsh takes and, like, saying the opinionated points in the comic. It's like, oh, so this is your authorial stand-in. And eventually it just does become his fursona.
And including a fursuit.
Yeah, he has a fursuit eventually. It's weird to think that in the late 1980s, you could include your real name, phone number, and address in a public post and charge $10 for a floppy of the images you'd made. I was like, I'm certain like there's no risk of like doxing because he certainly doesn't live there anymore. But like, ooh, that's a very dangerous thing to do.
That would be pretty common in fandom circles at the time. Like, a lot of old sci-fi magazines and other enthusiast press things would have people's full name and addresses in there, because the letters section was less like, it's less like, oh, here's letters to the magazine, and more like, here is the public posts on the forum, and if you want to go into DMs and argue with someone via letter, you can.
Or call them on the phone, I guess.
Or call them on the fucking phone, yeah!
Bizarre.
But the floppy does make a lot of sense, considering a lot of these websites would have been like $6 an hour for downloading.
Yeah, and that's where we should probably get into CompuServe hosting and how it was expensive.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to talk about the rest of the comic without talking about where it was.
Then I think we should. So Astraea, if it's like 1986, and I'm a pimply faced teenager who heard about these whole personal computer things, and I want to get onto this thing about people are calling CompuServe or the web, the not yet World Wide Web.
Well, it wouldn't be a web at all yet. The term didn't exist.
What would I have to do? What would I have to do to actually read THE Fox, this comic on the internet that I'm fixated on?
The two things about it are, it was only on CompuServe for a little bit, which is weird because all of the places say CompuServe, CompuServe, CompuServe when it comes up. Couldn't get a good clear answer, but it kind of seems like CompuServe files might have had to be in their like proprietary CompuServe format. But like CompuServe and Genie and Quantum Link, the other two places that he posted them to, were, it's not an internet service provider, because there wasn't an internet.
It's like a proto internet service provider. It is a service of connected computer networks that you can get on.
What they would call a timeshare. Somebody would buy a supercomputer, and then they would let other people dial in and rent it per minute to do calculations. And then eventually they were like, "What if we did that, but we sold that for at reduced rates to, like, consumers. And by reduced rates, I mean $6 an hour in 1980s money. So a lot of the power users of this thing would spend, like, $150 in 1980s money a month, which, just spitballing it, is over $300 fucking dollars now. And what do you get if you sign up for CompuServe besides a big bill? Well, data files. So, like, the Library of Congress, you can access that. You can get specific databases from manufacturers. Like, the Aluminum Manufacturers Association have aluminum material data sheets on there.
And you could also do a lot of things that are considered default and basic on the modern internet, like use your credit card to buy things, which was not a guarantee back in the day. These days, making credit card purchases like smooth as plastic, but back then it took forever.
There was also user spaces where you could go and you could talk to people. You could send something. It wasn't the email protocol, but it was functionally identical to email, more or less. But on a competing service called Quantum Link, you could upload files to that. And Genie, the General Electric Network for Information Exchange, Genie, both of these places had their own, you know, proprietary terms for, hey, here's a place where you can hang out and talk with other people like you. There was just, like, file repositories where you could upload files. And all of these comics got uploaded there and also uploaded to whatever Quantum Link used. I could not find as much information on Quantum Link. And none of these are the internet. None of these are the internet. They are proprietary computer database systems that you would contact.
If you didn't pay for them, you couldn't use them. They were subscription services only. They were not public internets like we know today.
Even as this was happening, their days were numbered, because it didn't take long for someone to basically figure out, like, I could just use my regular ass computer and hook it up to a regular ass phone line and do this myself.
And shortly after that, we get dial up as regular default packages, and then America Online, and then it's off to the races.
Well, America Online is a development of these older services and was one of the last ones where it was like this sort of walled garden kind of thing that eventually did, like, connect to the internet. Because this isn't the, like, wider internet. This is, hey, we've got our own computers. As opposed to the internet, which is like, here's a whole bunch of different computers, and they all have different addresses. And as long as you can, you know, dial that address, you can talk to it. Subtle but big distinction. And thus the internet.
And thus the internet. And thus the webcomic. The comic on the web.
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic calling this a webcomic because it does technically predate the web.
But it ended up on the web. It has quite a lot of the same conceits the webcomic does.
That's like splitting hairs. But yeah, that's how this thing was distributed. That and floppy disks, which you could order.
For $10.
For $10.
$10 for a floppy. Yeah, these are tiny, tiny images. They look like they would fit on an Atari screen, which I remind myself they probably would.
Yeah, like, the Commodore 64 is an 8-bit computer, so there's only so many pixels it can even push, and only so many colors it can even push. And the Commodore 64 was, like, the best consumer computer for that when it came out.
It's weird to open these on my Windows 11 PC, and they're the size of postage stamps.
Yeah, just these tiny, 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 teeny little thumbnails of kind of mid-furry jokes that keep having suspiciously large furries turn up in them.
And an awful lot of characters getting eaten by other characters.
Yes, which becomes more and more prominent as it goes.
The constant question of, like, wait, how large is everybody? Are they human size? Are they animal size? Are they bigger than animal size? It's not clear.
I think the most emblematic one for that for me was when it was like the fox is going into a room and then bends over and, like, he sticks his head under, like, a shower head, and it's something like, I hate hotel showers. And I was trying to figure out, it's like, is this a joke about how hotel showers are too low? Or is this a joke that he's giant and this is a regular size hotel? Or is it
both? Can't tell.
Yeah, I can't tell. Yeah.
The problem is, this comic seems to just, like, yes, a lot of these strips are, like, repeats of strips that were, or had to be, like, redrawn or, like, reissues of strips that already existed. But, like, the author does just do the same joke again and again a lot.
Or one of them could have been done in one paint program, and one of them could have been done in another. Initially, something called Koala Paint, and then eventually Advanced OCP Art Studio.
Advanced?
Yeah.
For the new millennium.
Yeah, both of which I think got nuked from orbit by Deluxe Paint when it came out.
And then when it moves onto the World Wide Web, it starts using digitally scanned in pencil and pen drawings, which I think would also be a first for a webcomic.
Yeah, it, yeah.
Although contemporaries were starting to do that around the same time, too, since it was possible. There's the one about OJ. Would you care for some free OJ? Oh, they're everywhere. I'm too young to remember OJ Simpson. I would have been like four.
This is like where our tiny 1 year of age difference enters, because that's one of my earliest memories is the OJ Simpson trial.
I don't remember it at all.
Yeah. No, I don't remember the details. It was just like, that was the end of every newscast every fucking day. And that's why I probably kept going back to it, because that was like half a fucking year, it felt like. And everybody would keep talking about it, because it was just every night on the news they would talk about that.
I think at that time, my greatest concern on TV was Muppet Babies. I was a Muppet Babies kid.
I was watching a lot of My Little Pony back then. Anyway,
that'll never add up to anything.
That'll never add up to anything, yeah. It's hard to find too terribly much to say about the comic, because it is most remarkable in that it is the first comic like this of a thousand comics like this, at least.
Yeah, digitally. But that's also where its remarkability kind of ends.
Yeah.
A lot of these felt like, they reminded me of when I was young, when I was really little, in like fourth grade, fifth grade, and started drawing comics like as a hobby. Like that's when I started. My very earliest pieces I remember were like made with like mechanical pencils on printer paper that I'd stolen from my dad's computer downstairs. And I would just draw them at my desk. And I wasn't good at, I wasn't like a funny kid. I wasn't like a class clown kind of kid. So I usually just ripped directly from joke books I had.
Yeah.
Or like made a metatextual joke. It's like, you're reading a comic on the page. Isn't that wacky? Stuff like that. There's a lot of those vibes in THE Fox. It's like, it really feels like somebody's first and only comic work. And for how long it goes on, it seems to stay that way pretty firmly. Like, no storylines ever start. It's only, like, way later that it develops into multi-panel comic gags, which, like, I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like the single-panel comic is perfected by Gary Larson's Far Side and just doesn't succeed anywhere else. I swear the Far Side is the only funny single-panel comic ever made.
To the extent that there is a comic, which I don't even think is one of the single panel comics, that is like transparently a Far Side joke.
Which one's that?
There's one where it's like a marriage counselor's office and there's a mantis, and one of the mantises is like, every night we make love and then she bites my head off.
I think that might just be a Far Side comic.
Yeah, well, I looked this up, and it turns out the Far Side made that joke, but way funnier, like, three times. And they were all, and there was more to the joke than just that every time.
Huh.
Okay. Yeah, there was.
Do you think it's plagiarized, or?
I don't think it's plagiarized, because it's not the same exact comic, and it's just so much fucking funnier. Because, of course it is. It's Gary Larson.
It's not that, like, THE Fox had no shot at becoming a newspaper comic. Because I've certainly read worse. I've read really, really bland newspaper comics that have, like, even less personality. But, like, it's up against such competition.
And I don't want to be too much of a jerk here, but the art quality just isn't up there, you know?
No. Part of that's that it has the technical limitation of being drawn on a Commodore.
And then we get to the stuff drawn on paper later, and it looks exactly the same, though.
And it's, like, not really any different. And it doesn't seem to improve.
And the Commodore, some of the earlier Commodore art, I actually kind of liked better, both because there's a charm to it, and some of the middle period stuff starts to actually feel like it's taking advantage of computer graphics. Like, there's one comic that has the fox having like these big sparkly eyes because he's been watching too many Japanese cartoons.
You gotta have blue hair.
The big eyes have this like kind of interesting, delicate sparkle to them that very much takes advantage of the pixel art. Ironically, the more it gets more beefy and more powerful and higher resolution, you get less of the interesting flourishes in it.
When it's in higher detail, you start to notice the mistakes a bit more, don't you?
Yeah.
That's kind of the trade-off. The pixel art becomes kind of charming when it's all you can do, but when you have more opportunities and you don't use them, then it starts to look like you're just missing beats.
Yeah, and I mean, I even think the art quality kind of goes down, like comparing the rendering of like the fox in a Roger Rabbit costume in one panel and seeing the detail and care in that compared to the later stuff, which half the time starts looking like it's traced from earlier drawings.
It might be, I don't know. That much doesn't bother me so much. It's that there are multiple examples of different strips with the same gag that kind of annoys me.
But not in a recurring joke kind of way, in a that's the same punchline kind of way.
I did like the interview from 1994. they're going by their screen name C128 QT Pie Sherry. And it was just kind of charming to realize that, like, yes, even back then people used smileys. People typed like stage directions of what they were doing.
It was such a furry ass internet conversation. Like, it was completely recognizable.
I'm not sure exactly how much merchandise this comic had besides the floppies. I couldn't find any examples beyond the floppies.
Just the floppies. I don't even think it had t-shirts. In that interview, it mentions like being being part of a comics anthology, which as far as I can tell, never was released. And the so-called company that was listed there put out like two zines and one more professionally printed comic. I was kind of surprised, especially getting into the mid-90s, that it hadn't gotten any kind of wider publication. Because like, I've read furry comic anthologies from this era, and the bar wasn't exactly high. That I could discern from any of my research. And frankly, this was more documented than I thought, so I don't think it existed.
Yeah, and like that's hardly a failure of THF Fox. Like that's been the fate of so many small projects.
Yeah, no. That's not like a disaster. It's, you know, just I wonder what happened.
Some things just get lost to history. For a deeper dive, for two characters who are clearly not gay men, Thad and Bun act very much like a gay married couple.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell if, like, are they going for that? When you mentioned that there are strips where they have girlfriends, and I saw a few of those, I was like, oh no, they're not. Is this just how comedy was written back then?
Yeah, like, is this just, like, an author who is, to be generous, just not thinking about women much for one reason or another, because like, oh, I don't know how to write women or whatever, or women are only girlfriends, or I don't have any ideas for what to do with these characters besides, because their girlfriends are just them, but girls, basically.
Yeah.
I will note that the muscly guys do seem to be drawn with a level of definition that none of the girls ever seem to get drawn with.
Eh.
But that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
People can do that without thinking about it at all. Sometimes a cigar really is just a cigar.
Yeah, like I can't really speculate too much, because as far as I can tell, guy never said he was gay later. And there is a strange mix of a ton of stuff I can find from this guy in later years and nothing I can find from this guy in later years.
It's very all or nothing, huh?
He kept doing stuff. I'm not quite sure I'd say he kept drawing, because he doesn't seem to have kept drawing. There's a certain point where all of the images I can find from him are either assemblages of other art or are assemblages of his own old art that he drew in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Like, the last couple drawings I saw of him on his Flickr account had some pictures of, like, this one rabbit that was larger than a castle and larger than a train. But the train and the castle were photo images that had been combined with this rabbit image that was very crunchy and clearly like a JPEG of a JPEG of a JPEG.
These are avant-garde in their own sort of sweet bro and hella Jeff way.
You know, and there is a certain point, like, he's also brings up Gulliver a lot. Gulliver from Gulliver's Travels, just what if Bugs Bunny was Gulliver from Gulliver's Travel?
But there's size play stuff in Gulliver's Travels. That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, it's just that specifically, though, over and over and over again, including, like, a series of images on the Flickr that were all, like, assemblages of Looney Tunes and other stock art.
Cool. That's a rabbit hole that we're not going to go down on this particular episode. That sounds like a different comic. Maybe we'll read that some other time.
That's fair enough. I'm just trying to find anything I can about this. This sure is a Gag-A-Day comic from the mid-1980s that was viewable on a Commodore for 6 cents a minute or whatever.
It kind of reminds me of like early 3D video games where, like, by today's standards, they look kind of trash. But that's because back in the day, 3D was their look, to borrow from Josh Wallen's Geek Critique analysis. Like, back in the day, 3D was the aesthetic. Seeing it on the computer was the attraction.
I mean, I would push back a little bit on that, because that is a big part of the attraction, and there's a bunch of games that did not age very well. But the late 1980s are kind of the start of the golden era of pixel art, you know, like, especially on computers, where you did have access to mice and drawing pads and paint programs.
You got the, what are they called, Living Worlds, those famous...
Living Worlds, wow.
Those color-turning backgrounds, which are incredible, like, Hall of Fame for pixel art, those.
So I think there's a little bit of that, but there's also, and that's definitely true, that it's really impressive that someone is just doing it who's not, like, a professional illustrator, who's not professionally trained with low-end hardware. Absolutely. Right. But yeah.
And it's kind of impressive that, like, you had reached a point in history where artistic tools had become so accessible that someone could do that.
Yeah.
And develop a fan base, a small cult fan base, a fan base that seems to bounce around from service to service, but a fan base nonetheless. And like, if this person could do it, why not you? It's an enticing thought. It sets the seed for quite a lot of artistic endeavors from other people.
And considering how many early comics, and it might just be that they're based on newspaper comics, but there are a lot of very early furry web comics that are just, hey, here's two people in a house.
And there are quite a lot of the middle period that are just, hey, here's two people in college, and then there's a lot more, and then there's a lot more, and then there's a lot more. And so many furry comics just take the friends hanging out angle and do nothing else with it. And it's honestly kind of disappointing how many of those I've read. It's just so dry at this point.
Yeah,
but when I was younger, I didn't really have the discerning taste that I do now. Now I demand very fine wines and cheeses. We've kind of talked about what the author did next. He's still around, still participates in some things, but definitely not the mini celebrity that he once was.
Yeah, he did do some like little YouTube videos where he took one of the like VTuber pieces of software and had like a default like animal face say what was very clearly a THE Fox joke through the mouth. That's as far as I can tell the most recent stuff he's done.
Well, it's not nothing. Maybe he'll find some other outbreak someday. Overall, though, I think THE Fox, like, as it is, like, maybe I'm just jaded here living in 2024. Maybe I've read so many comics that it's hard to impress me now, but, like, I don't know. This didn't really do a whole lot for me.
Yeah, no.
Just,
I mean,
just what the flat context is. It was fun going back and seeing, like, jokes from before my time and, like, what really tickled people's eyes. In a time before I was born, the internet that never was.
Yeah, like, you know, logging on into this, looking at it, going like, wow, there sure is a comic on the computer. And then since you get Quantum Link, then logging on to Habitat and playing Second Life in, you know, 8 colors. Proto Second Life in 8 colors.
But then, like, I've had that exact experience just 10 years later. It's like, wow, I sure can play Flash games on the internet, and then I would log on to something awful.
Yeah.
Like, I've been through the same emotional cycle, just with a later generation of hardware. I know what it's like to watch a community crumble underneath your feet and abandon it and never go back, and we don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's probably the thing I get the most out of it, is just like, oh, the cyclical nature of online communities has existed since... before there was an internet.
In many ways, it's always Eternal September. I don't know. What did you think of THE Fox overall, Australia?
That's what I've just been turning my head over and over again. I just kept diving into as much context for this as I could. It felt like I was trying to find something about it that was more deep and more profound than oh, this is really cool that this is the most notable example of this we have from this era, and is best ones for me were always where it just confronted me with how old it was, which wasn't even really intentional to the
art.
That's
not even the intended joke, but it's still a charm that it has in its own way.
This is kind of a dying breed of webcomic, really. If not a dead breed of webcomic, I'm trying to think of any.
Well, it's more that the gag a day thing isn't a comic anymore. It's just a Twitter feed. Now an artist just has their OCs and draws little one shots on their Twitter feed. It's not considered a comic anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
These are just posts.
I mean, that's the thing. This is a post. I think maybe that's the thing to take away from it. Maybe we're thinking about this as like, oh, these are like, you know, this work. Which, you know, it is, he wanted to get it syndicated and he wanted to get it published. But at the same time, it's a guy on the internet amusing his friends on the internet with his posts. Because this guy was in California, which was both a hotbed of early internet and a hotbed of early furries. And I think that's why he got big, because I think he would have been fairly local to a very large number of people using the internet at the time, who were also furries. Because as we all know, furries run the entire telecommunications network of America.
It's not wrong. You think it's an exaggeration. It's not.
It's not even remotely a joke.
But that wraps us for THE Fox, I think, unless you have more to say.
Yeah. No. Breezy.
I'm glad to have seen it. I don't regret reading it. It's an interesting time capsule, I will say. What would you like to do next?
There is one on the list that's like part of my memory of webcomics, because it was the first one I ever read. Yeah.
What's that?
That would be Fuzzy Nights.
Oh my. Yeah. I have read that one, but it's been ages.
Yeah, same. It's been ages.
Sure, let's take a crack at Fuzzy Nights. I remember liking it nicely.
I remember liking it. It at least, I remember it poaching from good people to poach from, as opposed to a lot of other webcomics.
Lovely. Where can people find you, Estrella?
You can find me at Automatic Tiger on a whole bunch of the internet. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Co-host. That's where you should follow me if you want to hear me talk about anything. And you can find me as Automatic Tiger on Blue Sky, which I still don't totally know what I'm using that site for. But a lot of people are on it, so there I am.
And I am Jade, and I'm in a variety of places, such as Gaia Online and FlashPlayer.net. and armorgames.net and miniclip.com, free games and shows. And also co-host at Cups of Jade and my link tree. You can find me all over the place. We'll see you next time on Ink Fox and Paper Tiger. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.